Hey guys, I'm Greg. This is Stephanie. This is our podcast, Living in Key West, Island Stories. We're both real estate agents here in the Florida Keys. So if you're looking to buy, sell, or have your property managed, go ahead and reach out to us. But today's a freaking awesome episode, right?
We're really excited. I mean,
we're huge weather people.
Yes.
I actually just got a little weather station. I'm going to ask you about it. Stephanie, kick it off.
What's up? So our guest today is Mr. Chip Casper. And I had to go over his title a couple of times, even though I researched it, because it's a lot. You're very accomplished and in charge of a lot of important things. So I'm going to take a crack at it here, but correct me if I'm wrong. You're the meteorologist in charge at the Key West National Weather Service campus, and you're the team lead for the NOAA Southeastern Caribbean Regional Collaboration Team.
That's it.
Boom, I nailed it. And we're going to have
first try, too.
Yeah, we're going to have Chip.
Guys, this
tell
is
us exactly.
Not cut.
No, this is raw. And you've been with the National Weather Service for 25 years.
That's right.
Which is crazy. Insane. Yeah. Okay. So the first question we always kick off every podcast with is, how did you end up in Key West?
Yeah, that's an interesting story. So the first time I ever visited Key West was actually a long time ago, before I moved here. And it was the early 90s. And it's funny, I was living in Central Florida at the time. I had just moved to Central Florida from up north. I was originally from the Chicago area. And my grandmother had a cousin who was getting older, and he was a World War II veteran. He served in the Coast Guard in Key West in the 40s. And he was starting to lose his vision, and he had expressed an interest in returning just to see what it was like, you know, some years later. So she asked me if I would drive him down.
Mm. Oh, wow.
And they'd pay for the gas, and, you know, he could see Key West one last time. So I said, sure, I've never been to Key West. I've read about it, seen it on a map, you know, seems pretty far out there. But so I did that, and that was the first time I visited Key West. I was kind of enchanted by it then.
Yeah.
But we were only here for a day or two, and, you know, I took my grandmother's cousin back and went on with my life. And later, I would come here to work for NOAA in 1999.
Mm.
And I didn't realize at that time that I'd be here 24 years.
That's long.
Here I am.
Yeah. So what enchanted you about it the first time that you visited?
I've always been a water person.
Okay.
I grew up not far from Lake Michigan and always loved the ocean and rivers and any chance I could get to be on or near the water. So just the fact that this place is all about water, it's surrounded by it. The culture is based on, you know, nautical occupations and endeavors. And I'd always been fascinated by shipping and sailing and, you know, shipwrecks and islands, and just to see that, just the vibrant nature of the geography along with the people that I met was very different.
Yeah.
And attractive to me.
Yeah. Well, you came to a good place to fit those needs.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
Checks all the boxes.
Yeah.
You were saying before we started filming that if someone would have told you that you were going to end up here long term, you would have been shocked. Why?
Well, because I got into weather kind of by accident. I was always interested in science, and I was more interested in, like, medical stuff.
Okay.
And, I was kind of thought, well, maybe I want to be a doctor, you know. And when I was 12, we were on a family vacation in Texas, and we basically got caught in a hurricane.
Mm.
And, I saw and was fascinated by just the power of the Category 3 hurricane.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, sorry about that.
No, it's okay. We're sitting in the middle of the National Weather Service, so I think it's okay.
Might be a phone call. Some stragglers coming up to the door.
Siren.
I went home and just went to my library and checked out every book I could on weather and figured out, well, that's what I want to do. So hurricanes and tropical meteorology really brought me into the science, and I thought, well, I want to go to the Hurricane Center. That's what I'm doing. I want to be Neil Frank. Neil Frank was the director of the Hurricane Center in the 80s, and I thought he was a great combination of somebody who had a really good science background, but he could communicate well, and that was kind of what I wanted to do. But then I kind of fell in love with serving in the community, you know, and really being a part of the community I serve and working with our partners like the city and the Coast Guard and emergency management and, you know, the captains along the waterfront and just everybody. And so I really fell in love with that type of meteorology in the community, if you will. So that's, I just decided to stay. And then, like I said, I met my wife here, and who's also a meteorologist, by the way. And then we had two kids, and here we are.
So. Yeah. I have so many questions that I want to ask, because I have questions that you've kind of touched on a little bit here. So I think one of the questions that I have that I figured I'd ask later, but now I want to ask it, is a lot of people ask us on our platforms, like, how could you ever live where hurricanes hit? You know, how are you not scared all the time? And we kind of always try to walk that line of we love weather. I mean, even when Ian went through last year, we were here. We went out and took footage of it. We were experiencing it.
But safely, like, everyone.
Yes, of course, safely. And I think it's just, for us, it's about respecting the power of Mother Nature and understanding what it is capable of, but also being in awe of it. And so I don't know, how do you articulate if someone was to ask you, like, how could you live where hurricanes potentially are a threat every single year?
Well, you could probably turn that question around for anybody anywhere.
Right.
I mean, exactly what I do.
Tornadoes could come out of the blue with no warning. How could you live where the earth just starts shaking at a moment's notice? You know, how could you live where a tsunami, you
know? Yeah.
So I think, you know, I mean, there's certainly hazards, natural hazards, wherever you are.
Yeah.
You know, and the key is not to let that hazard, that natural hazard, become a natural disaster, right? I don't even know if I like the term natural disaster, because hurricanes and tornadoes and earthquakes and tsunamis are part of nature, you know? And so the problem comes is when those events overwhelm our capacity to deal with them. And that's the definition of a disaster, right? Is when an event overwhelms our capacity to deal with normal life, you know, whether it's taking out the power or the water or, you know, buildings, et cetera. So, you know, one of the big initiatives really throughout the government and certainly in NOAA right now is building resilience, you know, and there's a lot of different elements to that. Part of its infrastructure, you know, we can build buildings like this building right here is built for a Category 5 hurricane. It's elevated, it's fortified, there's a lot of steel and concrete in all the right places, and you know, and that was important to keep our staff safe here. And so that's how we dealt with it, being the Weather Service, is we had to have something we knew is safe, you know, while we evacuate our families and friends, and so that we can, you know, serve the community and make sure that our community is not overwhelmed by a hurricane. So I think there's things anybody can do every day, whether it's with their own home, you know, or with public buildings, etc., to build resilience. Then that's more like on a physical resilience standpoint, and then there's, you know, more social resilience. What can we do? How can we work better together to make sure that we're all okay, and that especially the most vulnerable among us are not left in a bad spot. And so, you know, we started telling people a few years ago at the beginning of hurricane season, okay, yeah, have your supplies, have an evacuation plan, make sure you got batteries and do all those things. Check on your neighbor.
Yeah.
Right? Especially if they're maybe marginalized, or if they're older, or if, you know, they don't have a lot of friends or something.
Yeah.
So we kind of add that to the list too. And that, so that's all about building resilience as well.
Yeah. And that's great, because sometimes you forget, you know, you get caught in the moment or whatever, oh, there's a hurricane coming, and you just pack up and leave. But what if your neighbor can't pack up and leave? They need some assistance. So checking on them is great. You also made me feel really good when you gave that answer, because I'll get that question a couple of times on our lives that we do in the morning, every morning. And that's pretty much the answer I give. There's weather everywhere. So it's almost like, you know, be prepared, be aware, but you're going to get earthquakes, you're going to get tornadoes, you're going to get tsunamis, you're going to get all that other stuff in other places. We just happen to get hurricanes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I appreciate that answer from you.
Validating yeah. for what your answer is.
It's a little validating for me. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think also validation. There are people who maybe would say that they would rather chance a tornado for whatever reason, right? That's just their perspective, and they just feel they grew up there. That's more, that feels more comfortable to them, and hurricanes feel more scary or whatever it is. We're Floridians, so hurricanes are less scary for us. I think it's probably just, I think a lot of times people who live outside of Florida too, we get this question a lot, like, oh, well, how many hurricanes do you get? And it's like, I know you watch the news and there are a lot of named storms. That doesn't mean that we're impacted by all of them. So I think that also feels a little like, you know, we get the impacts of them, but I feel like people outside of Florida probably think we get a lot more impacts than we actually do.
Yeah, and that's actually a challenge in a way for risk communication.
Yeah.
Because a hurricane, because it's so big and it's so photogenic, satellites and, you know, news stations are sending people to the coast. People get really caught up in the drama of the story of the storm, which, you know, I get it. I mean, I understand. But when it comes to, you know, being resilient and being prepared and putting yourself in a safe situation, what we really want folks to do and what emergency managers want folks to do is make decisions based on your risk.
Yeah.
Not sort of the trajectory of the story of the drama of the storm.
Yeah.
You know, well, where is the cone? Where is it going? Did it move right? Did it move left? It's not it. A hurricane is not just an it. What we're really concerned about is what can hurt you and what can cause a bad outcome. And that is the damaging, violent, sustained winds around the inner core. You know, the rainfall flooding, particularly, you know, in areas that have river basins and mountainous terrain, you know. The storm surge flooding, which is really our biggest threat to life here in the Florida Keys. That's the rise of the ocean, you know, with the storm. Tornadoes that can form actually in the outer ring bands, you know, and that can be damaging as well. And then finally, the powerful ocean waves and surf and currents. And so, you know, these are the five hazards that we're looking at when we say hurricane. And what we're trying to do with Weather Service, with our partners, you know, with the emergency managers and Coast Guard, the city, et cetera, is to assess, okay, where's the storm going? We're working with the Hurricane Center, our colleagues, our Weather Service colleagues up at the Hurricane Center, to determine, okay, where the storm is going, how strong is it going to be, and what's it going to look like in terms of structure. And that's really what the Hurricane Center specialists are doing. And then what we're doing is to kind of translate that, where is it going, how strong is it going to be, what is it going to look like, to impacts with these five hazards. And then we can work with our partners to say, all right, if you live on South Stock Island in a trailer, you need to move. Or if you live, you know, in a house built in, the wood frame house built in 1950, in this location, it may not be there, you know. And so that's kind of what we're trying to do with the local level.
Yeah, so that sounds like it's probably pretty challenging, though, is trying to get out fact-based information about real on-the-ground threats versus sort of the I don't know, maybe you'd call them talking heads or the people who are telling this big dramatic story and people being caught up more in that rather than what's actually happening in their backyard or potentially could happen in their backyard.
Yeah, I mean, the media are really our partners in this endeavor. We meaning sort of the public safety folks, we can't get the message out, the right message out to the right people at the right time without the media. And so, you know, a lot of what we do in the off season too is work with the media and try to, you know, try to help educate them and try to work with them and have them educate us on, you know, just how do we get this message out. At the same time, especially now with all these platforms, we're competing for attention, and sometimes the sources of information are not the best, you know, and because anybody can go out and put together a Facebook page and call themselves, you know, Mr. Hurricane or something, and say, you know, they have all the right information. I know that's, in some cases, that's counterproductive to what we're trying to do. Because at the end of the day, you know, the men and women of the National Weather Service were we're public servants. We're paid by taxpayer dollars. Mm-hmm. And our mission in the National Weather Service is to protect life and property. Mm-hmm. That's it. So, you know, we're coming to work regardless of how many thumbs ups and likes and all that. You know, we get on our Facebook page.
Yeah.
And we get a lot of it.
Yeah, you do. You do. You have a good social media presence for sure. So if you could wave a magic wand and tell people or have people conduct themselves in a very specific way when it comes to tropical weather, like, where would you say, this is where I would get my information, this is how I would stay up to date, this is how I would prepare, like, what would be your perfect solution?
So, I mean, the battle of coping with hurricanes is not, you know, on September 10th when you have a Category 3 hurricane 3 days away, right? It starts in the off season by just educating yourself. You know, we have a lot of people, a lot of turnover in the Keys. You guys know real estate agents. A lot of folks are coming in and out. A lot of people have no idea. We talked about how to deal with a hurricane. And so I really feel like one of those things on your checklist, you know, when you move in, it's like, okay, I've taken care of the real estate and the bank and getting the kids set up in schools and all this. And one of those items to check off is, okay, let me educate myself about the hurricane threat.
Yeah.
Where do I go to for weather information? Weather.gov, all right? Not .com, but .gov.
Okay.
And in our case, weather.gov/KEY. Hurricanes.gov. Okay, this will give you the best information, science-based information in the world on hurricanes and impacts of the Keys. Where can you go for local preparedness tips? You know, MonroeCountyEM.com. So that'll take you to the Monroe County Emergency Management website, and they have all kinds of preparedness information, shelter information, what to do with your pets, what to do if you own a business. They have Alert Monroe, which you can sign up for, and you'll get, you know, information sent to your phone, including from the Weather Service.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that's all available on MonroeCountyEM.com. You know, the City of Key West also has a good website for city-specific information, the Coast Guard. A lot of people have boats. A lot of people work or play on the water. And so going to the Coast Guard sector, you know, Facebook page would be a good idea. And then just understanding your risk. So you move in.
Yep.
And you should, if you buy a home, you should know, you know, I mean, it's easy for the Keys. What evacuation zone are you in?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So, but there are some places that are more vulnerable than others. And so, I mean, if I'm owning a home, I want to know exactly what that elevation is from an elevation certificate or a survey. I want to know what the construction is on that house. You know, when was it built? What is the wind rating? Does it have the right, you know, is it built to the right codes for the roofing, et cetera? So, you know, and then have a plan of action. Then think about this while you're not, while your heart's not racing because I got a category three coming at me. Figure this out beforehand because your heart's still going to be racing when everything's going on. But then if you have a plan, okay, well, where do I want to be stuck in a shelter at FIU, or do I have, you know, a cousin in Orlando that I can go to, or, you know, can I get a decent hotel room reserved? So just kind of thinking about that.
Yeah. Beforehand. So preparing before your emotions are involved. Tears. Yes, because it's harder to make good decisions when you're feeling scared, obviously. It sounds like it's just having that data, just the raw data and the information that you need to make good decisions once the information starts coming in about the storm, because depending on the elevation of your house, you may or may not be more impacted by storm surge or whatever it is. So just having that information, it's less
knowing
of a guessing
game. If your street floods or not.
Right. No, yeah, exactly.
We experienced that with Ian.
Yeah, we were very new to the island at that point. And I think also because it wobbled a little bit. And so just the side of Catherine we were on, the block of Catherine we were on, we lost our car. And we were like, oh. Okay.
We weren't the only ones.
No. When we went to go get our rental, they said, oh, we've had over 100, easily over 100 people already, you know, with loss of their vehicle.
I'd like to talk about Hurricane Ian a little bit.
Perfect.
Just because I think it's a good example of of what we're talking about.
Okay. Yep.
Because here's a storm. First of all, you know, the forecasts are pretty amazing. I mean, I've watched it in my 25 years in the weather service, especially for hurricanes, really improved. And I remember, you know, we had like just a little disturbance in the Central Caribbean. And the specialists at the Hurricane Center were predicting not only a path that would go through the Caribbean and then curve up and kind of come near Western Cuba and toward Florida, but they were predicting a major hurricane, which is category 3, 4, or 5. I want to say 3 or 4 days out, mm-hmm. you know? And so that right there is pretty amazing that it was a major hurricane mm-hmm. by the time it got to the Southern Gulf of Mexico. Then we have the cone, which we're all familiar mm-hmm. with. And the cone is kind of pointed toward the Florida Panhandle or the Florida West Coast, or, you know, it's going up in that general direction. And I think people in the Keys see the cone, it's over there, we're good. Well, the cone is only representing the probable path of the center of the storm. It's not talking about those five hazards
yeah.
I mentioned. It's not considering a specific location for impacts. The cone isn't even based on any real-time numerical modeling. Mm. A lot of people don't know that. It's just based off of the last 5 years of average track errors. So we can expect the center to move outside the cone one-third of the time. That's the way that the cone is constructed, basically,
wow.
so that using the last 5 years of track errors, that center of the circulation will pass within the cone two-thirds of the time, mm-hmm. one-third outside the time.
Mm-hmm.
So what did it do for Ian? He mostly stayed in the cone. Right in the Gulf of Mexico, it moved to the right side.
Mm-hmm.
It really didn't even move outside it.
Mm-hmm.
It was just kind of on the right mm-hmm. border. And that's kind of within the average track errors.
Mm-hmm.
But the impacts, especially in Key West, Florida,
yep.
were huge
mm-hmm.
because also, and this is again what we're tasked to do is to try to paint a picture of that risk,
mm-hmm.
right? For storm surge flooding, you have the storm surge, water rise associated with the hurricane. You have, but really what matters is your car going to flood?
Yeah.
Right? Like how high is the water going to get?
Yeah.
Well, that's the storm surge. That's the astronomical normal high tide.
Mm-hmm.
In the case of Ian, we had what we call a king tide,
mm-hmm.
or kind of a top 5% of the year
mm-hmm.
type tide. Even without storm surge, we were
flat floating
underwater.
There.
And mm-hmm. all those little spots you see water,
yeah.
and you're
mm-hmm.
like, hey, it didn't rain. That's okay. King tide flooding. And then we actually had a further anomaly because the Gulf Stream was undergoing it was slowing down east of Florida, and that oftentimes causes a little bit of a water
mm-hmm.
level rise. So we kind of had everything set up, and then of course it hit at night when we had the high tide. And obviously we know what happened in many parts of Key West, Stock Island, and even some of the lower Keys.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So that's all within the average kind of. It wasn't even a big swing from left
mm-hmm.
to right.
Wow.
That's kind of within the average range of error.
Mm-hmm.
What we're trying to do at the time is we're saying, well, 2 to 4 feet, right? I mean, 2 feet at low tide, your car's fine.
No, yep.
You know, it's no big deal. 4 feet at high tide, well, that's a problem.
Yeah.
It's a whole other story.
So, but if you're just focused on, well, it's over there, Jim Cantore's in Fort Myers, we're good.
Yeah.
You know, then that's not going to paint a proper picture.
Yeah.
And so we're trying to figure out ourselves just how to, you know, communicate better.
Mm-hmm.
And risk is
mm-hmm.
challenging.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, even the people that we talk to, they're like, this, our road never floods. Now you got to have a hurricane close enough to probably create that to where it would flood where it's at, that for the most part. But, I'm saying this for the viewers, it was crazy to watch how fast it came in, because
mm-hmm.
we were out there at 10:30, we were actually doing a live, we were out there at 10:30, and it's like, oh, it's right at our driveway, and we were in at the time we were renting a place that was built in 2019, solid, built to Cat 5 standards or whatever you want to say, so I never felt unsafe in that. It was raised up.
Yep.
So as far as that goes, but you just start seeing that water come down the street and you're like, well, it's nighttime now. The wind's blowing a lot harder than it was. And a big factor to me would have been nighttime, because now you're like, where do you go? What has come out in the road? What is, you got branches that could be falling. It's just dangerous. So at that point, we see the water coming down and we're like, what are we going to do? Leave the car. Because where would we go park it, first of all? Then we're going to have to walk back in a hurricane. You know, so you can lose your car. It's not worth you going out. And this water came in so fast. It was like, okay, 10:30. It's just at 11, 11:30, it was up over. We have a Subaru Outback, and it was up over the wheel panels. And it was, and you're like, well, that's that. And it, I don't know how much higher it got, but it went up about, what, three steps at our place, and we had five steps. So we were, I felt fine there. And then also, don't go driving it. Nope. At 11:30 at night, we had, I'm getting on a little bit of a high horse here. 11:30 at night, someone in a truck and went flying down the street. And this also could probably contributed. It went up to about the fifth step when he went flying through. It's a no wake zone, guys. Yeah. He was going through it. He got to the end of the stop sign right across from the Martin Luther
community center.
And it was up to the, almost up to
his windows.
Door. And it was a lifted truck. He throws it in reverse and floors it back out.
Yeah.
So he probably totaled his truck also.
Yeah.
But don't do that.
Well, I also think something that's interesting, and kind of back to Chip's point, was that the people that were around us were like, this street never floods, this street never floods. And so they're using this very limited historical memory data, so to speak, to say like, well, there's no threat here. Like, we didn't think to tell you to move your car because we never get floods here. And it's like, well, that's not really the risk though, right? That's just like this little, tiny little few year period of time where you're saying, oh, I've lived here 10 years and it's never flooded. It's like, well, we've never had a storm like this in those 10 years. So
yeah, that's a great point to make. Just, you know, every storm is unique.
Yeah.
Really, it truly is. And I've worked, I think, over 50 different tropical storms or hurricanes. And they're all, you know, I mean, obviously some were worse than others, like Hurricane Irma in 2017. And I was here for Hurricane Wilma in 2005, which the water got right up to the back part of the property there.
Really?
That's a whole other storm surge story. But every storm is unique in terms of the physical impacts, in terms of, you know, when it happens, what's happening in the community, you know, and yes, you can't use this limited historical knowledge for a particular location, you know, especially when things are changing.
Yeah. I
mean, every storm is unique. There's construction going on.
Yeah.
They're laying down. They're replacing parts of the aqueduct now, and you know that the grades rise and fall, et cetera. So,
I think it's also like interesting to think about too, like that which we've talked about before is like the desensitization.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to say.
Oh, okay, sorry. Yeah. Where people you get so many warnings, you get so many storms that pop up, and even if you don't feel the impact, a lot of times it's kind of like, oh, and you know, and especially once you get further into hurricane season, and you're like in the, you know, M area, like, and it's like, okay, another one, you know, and people kind of like let their guard down, or they've lived here 10 years and they've never had flooding.
I'm glad you brought up watches and warnings, just because I think, and I know there's a lot, but I think that's important to understand what goes into those, you know, and for hurricanes and tropical storms, of course, we have a hurricane watch and a hurricane warning, and a tropical storm watch and tropical storm warning. Hurricane, of course, is sustained winds of 74 miles per hour or greater, and tropical storm warning is for 39 to 73. So there's a big range there, because 39 is kind of like, well, that's a bad winter day.
Yeah, you
know, right.
I'm not going
like a little squall going through.
And 73 is, you know, you got trees down.
Yeah.
And it's basically a hurricane. And you know, the conditions that we saw in Key West for the wind conditions in Key West for Hurricane Ian were basically tropical storm, but not the lower. They were more toward the higher end, you know. And that just goes to show you that, you know, tropical storms are storms too.
Yeah.
And they can have impact. But we also have a specific watch and warning program for storm surge. And, but it's really for life, what we call life-threatening storm surge, and it's, that's like 3 feet or higher above the ground level where you're at. Of course, you know, there was a lot of loss of life in Lee County from storm surge, tragically so. And some of those, they're still investigating kind of how all that went down. But we know that a lot of people were in cars trying to get away. And that is not the way you mentioned. Don't get in your car.
Yeah.
Please. Do you never drive in water. That's just not smart.
Yeah.
And you're really putting yourself at risk.
Yeah.
But we did have a Hurricane Ian, a storm surge watch a few days out. And I just want to like emphasize, if we go under a storm surge watch, that's kind of a big deal.
Okay.
Because we're saying, look, we have a potential. Watch is kind of, we're looking at it,
keep
but
it
it's
on.
Not a sure thing. And warning's like, get ready, it's coming.
Right.
Okay. And, but a storm surge watch in the Florida Keys, when you're saying, hey, there's enough of a potential of above 3 feet that we're issuing this product, you know, and it's not done haphazardly. It's not automated. This is, we're coordinating almost hourly with our colleagues up at the National Hurricane Center. We're having meetings internally. We're working with our emergency management partners, and we're trying to assess, okay, when is the time that we would need this? And a watch is generally issued 48 hours before a possible impact. Whereas a warning is about 36 hours.
Okay.
And you had mentioned something too about nighttime. Mm. And I'd like to emphasize, you know, with preparations, you need to consider that, because a lot of stuff you can't really get done at night.
I mean,
or it's unsafe. You know, do you want to get up and put your shutters on at midnight? You know, or do you, so kind of when you're doing your preparations, keep that in mind. Oh, how many daylight hours?
Okay.
You know,
You don't got 48 hours.
Right.
You have whatever.
Maybe
time. Yeah, maybe today, tomorrow morning or whatever.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. Okay, interesting. So, what is the worst storm that you've personally ridden out here?
Well, it's got to be Hurricane Irma.
Irma.
In 2017.
Yeah.
Now, as bad as it was here, it was much worse just 30 miles up the road.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, we basically had the equivalent of a category one hurricane wind in Key West. And I say that because some people think because Irma was a four, that, and if they didn't evacuate and they were in Key West, that they survived a category four.
Yeah.
No, you didn't.
Yeah. Set the record straight on that, because there's a big difference if a four goes right over you and a one goes right over you. You did not survive a four. If
you're in Key West, and the reason that's a big deal is the power of the force of the wind grows exponentially with wind speed. And I have a graph that I show it, different talks that kind of shows like the curve going up.
Yeah.
And once you get to a Cat 5, it's just going straight up.
Yeah.
And so, I mean, the damage potential from for a Category 5 versus a Category 1 is something like 500 times.
Wow.
That's significant.
Yes.
Yeah. And, you know, if you see where Category 5s have made landfall, there haven't been that many. Hurricane Michael just a few years ago, Panama, just east of Panama City. Hurricane Andrew, right here in South Florida, in 1992. Then we had, let's see, Camille was a landfall in Mississippi in 1969. Labor Day, Florida Keys hurricane, 1935. And the interesting thing about those most severe hurricanes, those Category 5s, for all those, they were tropical storms only 3 days before. And so what we find in the most intense hurricanes is they typically undergo a period of what we call rapid intensification near the coast. And that's something that keeps emergency managers up at night. Because with Irma, fortunately, it was a long tracked, what we call Cape Verde system. It formed initially as a disturbance off the Cape Verde Islands off of Africa and tracked west-northwest for days. And there was plenty of time for people to prepare. But with something that you think is not really a threat and all of a sudden becomes a major hurricane and you have, you know, less than 24 hours, I mean, that's a big deal. And so we would ask people to kind of consider that too. I mean, consider, okay, everything's going perfect. You have plenty of time. All the watches and warnings are timely and everything's you know, there's plenty of hotel rooms and the roads. Now think, okay, you got 24 hours. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
And so that might be something to keep in mind, to kind of run those two exercise scenarios in your head. Not to scare everybody here, but I'm just saying.
I mean, you know, we're going to go home and pack up and leave. But, no, I mean, but that's a good point is to, I mean, if you think about Andrew, right, Hurricane Andrew, that was fast. That went up pretty quickly in, what, a three-day span to a devastating hurricane. So, like, if you see one, and nowadays, you know, we joke, oh, well, we were just watching the Weather Channel for 15 days for this hurricane to get
like
here.
It takes forever.
Well, it is tough because they start so long, you know, but once it gets here, expect that rapid intensification, like you said,
and
that's just something
that
to be aware of and be ready, especially if you're living on the Keys, because it's one way in, one way out. So, I mean, plan on that too.
Absolutely, yeah. That's just more to what you're saying is having the plans for the different contingencies and the different scenarios.
And one other, I guess, point I made to add on to that, it underscores the importance of kind of checking regularly the forecast, you know, not to get people obsessive compulsive about hurricane season. Most of the time you're going to be fine. Hurricanes are rare, but like during the season, we're in the hurricane season now, probably good maybe once a day, just
sure,
hurricanes.gov, okay, we're fine. Once you have a threat out there, maybe check twice a day, and then if you're if the cone's coming near you, or you know it's getting close, and you're starting to hear some chirping about it in the community, you know, maybe three times a day, check to see what's true and what's not true, and you know, and just because a forecast is one way one day, it could change. You know, typically when these tropical storms or hurricanes are coming toward the coast, one thing about NOAA is we pretty much put all eggs in the back. I mean, we're putting all hands on deck to figure out where this thing's going. So, you know, we're sending an aircraft, Hurricane Hunter aircraft, both from NOAA and the U.S. Air Force. Like, we're releasing extra balloons here at the office. Normally we do two a day. We double that to four a day along with everybody along the coast. You know, we're running specialized models that are tuned just for tropical systems and hurricanes. So, you know, the goal is just to get a more accurate forecast. And they do change sometimes as we're putting in those extra data sets. So just keep that in mind. Just check regularly.
So what's it like when there is something out there that is, I mean, at what point do you have like a plan activated where you have all hands on deck? Like, is there a, what's the tripwire for that?
So every storm's different.
Yeah.
So we're in a monitoring stage. You know, right now, you know, for us, we try to focus on what's typically the quieter part of the hurricane season, the beginning, for outreach and helping people prepare and working with our partners to make sure that our plans are good. We do that internally as well. Every year, we're actually having our internal workshop this week, later this week, and we're having a couple of our colleagues from the Hurricane Center down that will join us in that. So we're kind of dusting off the plans and making sure everything works this time of year. Once there's a credible threat, meaning I can't take it off the table, then we start a little bit more activity on the operations floor. We're doing a little more coordination with the Hurricane Center and the other offices. Typically, people might notice and they're calling more and tweeting and posting more, and we'll handle that. So the workload can sometimes gradually increase. But then once we get to the point where that we can't take that threat off the table and it looks like, hey, this is an increasing risk, right? To the Florida Keys communities and our maritime area that we forecast for, then we'll start tweaking our scheduling. And then at the point where we know, like, okay, this is going to be close, we're either going to go under watches or warnings, or somebody's going to have an impact, then we pretty much transition our work schedule to an all hands deck type situation. Yeah. At some point, we're also keeping in mind our safety here, and you know, if it becomes unsafe to travel to work, we'll look at that and shelter in place.
Okay.
You know, and make sure everybody's here before
yeah.
the conditions deteriorate. So we become customers of our own
products
and services. You know, and fortunately, we've only had to do that a few times over the years.
Mm-hmm.
But it's something that we did do for Hurricane Irma for almost 48 hours.
Wow. So everyone just slept here?
Yeah, so we kind of have it all planned out. It's a fairly big facility, and there's a lot of little nooks and crannies.
Yeah.
But we have a plan on, you know, who's going where.
Yeah.
And again, half the people are working, half the people are off.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and part of all this, too, is we're looking after our physical health, but we got to keep our mental health in check as well. Hurricanes can be stressful. You're working 12-hour shifts, you know, and you got family that you're trying to keep safe.
Mm-hmm.
And so that can all be kind of crazy. Mm-hmm. So we're just trying to make sure people can check in mentally as well as, you know, make sure that they're physically safe.
So have you ever had anyone on staff who had to bring their pets here when they were sheltered in place?
Well,
unofficially.
You know, pets are not allowed in government facilities officially.
Okay. Yes. Okay. So no.
So absolutely
officially.
Not.
Yeah.
Stephanie.
Officially. Forget I asked.
Gracious.
Okay. So, hold on. Let me look at my notes here because we've gone on so many really good rabbit trails.
I feel like we can talk forever.
Yes, I mean, seriously. I know.
Weather's weather.
Yeah, weather's weather. Yeah.
As in we like it, not as in all.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, weather's going to happen, but you know.
Let's see. Okay, maybe we can do like a few fun questions, and I'm sure I'll come back with some more weather questions that'll pop up in my head. So, what advice would you give 18-year-old Chip?
Oh my goodness.
Mm. Doesn't have to be weather related, obviously.
Go to UF instead of FFU.
Oh.
Man, I've been wondering when I was going to be able to put that
you're
in
like,
there.
Boom,
nailed it.
Yeah.
That's a tough one. I would just say, you know, embrace change. It's the only thing permanent in life, right?
Yeah.
Is change. So just roll with it, you know.
That's great.
I think, I've thought about this recently. You know, there's a lot of different paths, especially if you're 18.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a lot of different possible outcomes. Don't obsess over, like, the one that you want at the time. Sometimes there's different ways to get there. You know, I've told my own kids this. You know, where another door closes, one opens.
Mm-hmm.
And I think act.
Yeah.
You know, take action.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's really good advice for everyone. What's your favorite place?
You don't have to be 18 for that.
No. What's your favorite place to eat in Key West?
Oh, I got quite a few.
Okay, name them all.
I mean, I like just the little corner best coffee in town there.
Sandy's?
For my morning. Well, Sandy's is good too.
Yeah.
But there's this little one right here.
Oh, so okay.
I think they call it the best coffee shop in town.
Oh, okay.
Oh, okay. I thought you were just saying it was the best coffee.
Oh, okay. Okay.
I was just going to roll with it.
Okay.
And so, they're very convenient for us here.
Yes.
Of course. And Edwin's working right now, so he's always nice to see. But,
okay.
And then, I mean, you know, I can't do this every day, but man, the curry snapper at Seven Fish is pretty
okay.
Oh, that's good to know.
Hmm.
But I mean, that's kind of a special occasion.
Yeah, curry snapper at Seven Fish. Okay, you're the first person who said that, so I'm glad you did.
Yeah,
yeah. I think there's a lot that like tend to be like the same ones that a lot of people say, but you're the first one who said that, so we love
you. Are the first one to say that.
Yeah,
we get that's another frequently asked question.
Yeah.
Yeah, I get a lot of questions when we do our lives in the morning. I'll probably get 300 to 500 questions every live we do in a while. So I rapid fire them up, but that is a question that is asked a lot, is what is your favorite place? And I'm like, oh my God. Because there's actually a lot of food on the island.
There, we're really
and it's, it makes it tough, but then you find your favorites and you go to your favorites.
That's right.
Yeah. So we're trying to like,
expand our horizons,
you know, once a week or once every other week. Like, we went to Manja Manja for the first time, and we're gluten free, and it was
they had a lot of options.
Yeah. So I'm glad we went.
Yeah, but we should go to Seven Fish.
Now we need to go to Seven Fish.
Try the Curry Snapper.
So
yeah, absolutely.
It's good to know.
Okay, so hopefully this isn't too soon, but do you have any pets? And can you tell us?
We have one.
You do?
Yeah, it's a cat.
A cat.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's about all we can handle right now.
Yeah. But, absolutely. Yeah.
But yeah, no, I actually grew up with dogs.
Yeah.
I love dogs. I can't give the dogs any dogs the attention.
Yeah. Right now, it's not fair when you're so busy too. And yeah, absolutely. Okay. So I saw when I first emailed you to ask you to come on, it was right after the National Hurricane Center had sent out that they were doing some updates in 2023. There were like 7 updates that they were doing. So one of them is they're extending the tropical weather outlook to 7 days instead of 5 days. But also I thought something that was really interesting was that they're doing the simultaneous live stream broadcasts on YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter.
Yes.
So I wanted to talk about that just a little bit because I feel like a lot of people get their news from social media, and I think that that could be really incredible because it's a credible source on social media for that information. So can you talk more about that?
Yeah. They've been putting a lot of kind of time and energy over the last few years developing that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and I think they tried it out for this little disturbance. It became Tropical Storm Arlene in the Gulf for like a minute earlier this week. But yeah, usually the director, who's now Dr. Michael Brennan, great choice. I think just a really accomplished hurricane specialist and scientist. I've known him for many years. He's been working with us here in Key West, you know, for a long time. So he'll be usually the person that will be doing this. You know, they put a lot of thought into this, and they're serious about really kind of reaching people in terms of risk. So, you know, they're actually working. I mean, they're pretty good with the science part, but with the social science part, I mean, they want to do the best they can to reach people. And so I know they work with social scientists and the media to be as effective as they can, you know, and if we in the Keys ever kind of have a situation like Hurricane Irma where we have a significant threat, then, you know, I've talked to Mike, and we'll be able to kind of provide him information that's locally relevant that he can, you know, kind of get out to their many, many followers on all those platforms. So I think it's a great tool, you know, and the Hurricane Center is really, really most of the Weather Service has gotten really good with providing information, especially via Facebook and Twitter. And then, like you said, I think it's going out on YouTube as well.
Yeah. Yes, it's YouTube, Facebook, and Twitter. Live streams will be provided more frequently when the media pool is activated, and the media pool is typically activated when a hurricane watch is issued for any portion of the U.S. contiguous coastline. And then it says the National Hurricane Center will provide these live stream broadcasts at 11:30 a.m. Eastern. So, yeah, I think that's amazing. I think that's going to be, I mean, because so many people really do get their news from social media, or they're on social media all the time versus to, you know, having to go to a specific website or whatever, like to have it there in their feed. I think that that's going to be huge. So that's awesome. And just for everyone who's listening, the hurricane season outlook is 12 to 17 named storms, 5 to 9 hurricanes, 1 to 4 major hurricanes. So that's what we're looking at potentially this year. And we've already had one named storm.
Yeah. One can cross off.
Yeah.
Arlene.
Exactly.
Now what do we got left?
What do you mean?
11 to 16 names.
11
storms.
To, yeah, exactly. So, is there anything else that you wish people knew, would consider, just anything that you wish, like, you know, sometimes when you do something professionally, you're like, there's the same things that come up over and over, and you're like, I wish people knew that that wasn't true. I wish people knew. Is there anything that you wish, like, people knew?
Well, we've talked about a lot of that here. I would just remind people, you know, again, we've talked about ways to get information, and social media is a big one. Take responsibility for what you're putting in your brain.
Yes.
Be an active user, not a passive. Don't just assume that anything that pops up is true.
Don't believe everything you hear.
So take the time and the diligence to find trusted sources
yeah.
for information. And that's not just weather. I mean, that,
yeah. right.
but yes, weather especially.
Yeah, absolutely. And we will link to all of the websites that you cited in the interview and the social media and all of the reliable sources that we've talked about. We'll link to that. And also, I'm sure, like, as hurricane season progresses, we'll be able to cite those in our social media and things like that as well. So, but I understand what you're saying. And I think that that's sage advice for no matter what media that you're consuming, is just be really mindful of, just because it's on the internet doesn't mean it's true. So go to the reputable sources.
That's it.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much, Chip.
Yes,
thanks for having me.
Very much. I enjoy this. Thank you.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right, guys. Thank you. See ya.
Thank you. That was wonderful.